Chris Coder is on with his presentation, and Ralph Siri stands in line for the next one.
Hello. Yesterday, when I was listening to Yusra's presentation, I was very excited because many of the things that she spoke about are current research projects that we're engaged in at the Illinois Math and Science Academy. And I had pondered maybe putting together a small informal presentation over lunch today. And I'm honored that I was able to get onto the official schedule as a substitute. However, when I read the topic that I was inheriting, the science, society, and community, I realized that I had gone from the applied part of the program yesterday into the big picture, big question section. And the conversations we've had today, they've given me a sense of a bit of humility when I think about how much, how big and significant the questions are that are being faced by everyone who I've had a chance to meet and speak to this week. Inspired by Yusra, I began to think, and I'm going to take us back now to the smaller scale. In fact, I'll be taking us to the smallest school, inspired by Yusra's observation yesterday. And for those of you who have said to me, I can't believe you have four children, there they are. One of the things that's important to me is not simply my professional work, but also the fact that I'm looking at the future of my four children and trying to, hoping for something a little bit better than what I see around us today in terms of opportunity for themselves and the people who will be their friends and colleagues. In the United States, we have a day, which I know it's a practice also done in other countries. It used to be called Take Your Daughter to School Day. Now it's called Take a Child to Work Day. Apparently, boys were not aware that their parents worked, and so they needed to be included in this practice as well. This year, I decided that I would take my oldest son, Aiden. He's the second one standing next to my daughter. I thought I would take him to work, but I cheated a bit because I didn't want to take him on the official day. I wanted to take him a day early. At the Illinois Math and Science Academy, we have something that we call Presentation Day. And I thought that if he really wanted to get an idea of what my work was like, he shouldn't go on Thursday when I had 8 hours of meetings. He should go on Wednesday. Wednesday, Presentation Day at IMSA, is a day that all of the students who have been doing research throughout the year give papers to one another and to the mentors who come from industry and from the research fields and to their teachers and to their families and friends. It's a conference. I mean, we would recognize it as a conference. We'd recognize the frustratingly short time periods allotted to present a year's worth of work. We'd recognize the technical difficulties with PowerPoint. And we'd also recognize people getting up and being proud of their work. And my son and my children know that from time to time I take off and go somewhere and read a paper and listen to other people read papers. And so this was a really nice opportunity for him to see high school students doing science in a social environment, getting a chance to see that science was not simply about the kinds of things that I abhor him doing in school, which don't excite him very much, but he would actually see that people not only engage in scientific work and answering questions, but part of that process is meeting with other people who are like-minded and who will listen and who will ask questions. So because the school can't believe that any learning would occur outside of the school building, he's required to write a paper about what he did during his day when he was playing hooky. So that night I said, before you forget what we did today, make a list of everything that went on so that you can write your paper. And, first of all, he really got a taste of what my work was like. You'll see, we arrived at 8:25, and by 8:30, I was called into an unexpected meeting. But you'll also see that his first presentation was a student who was doing research on ALS. The second presentation was another student doing work on ALS and protein structures. A presentation on pain and pain prevention, a presentation on personality classification, And a presentation on seizures and whether ginseng extract can reduce the severity of second onset seizures in rats. He felt very bad for the rats at the end of the day. The reason I wanted to bring this up is because the other thing that Yusra mentioned was she was tying her presentation to some of the goals and outcomes for this colloquium. And one of the outcomes is to identify aspects of the environment that are necessary in order to foster the scientific mind, the protection of it or the growth of it. I am lucky enough to work in an environment that is something of a greenhouse to that effect. The Illinois Math and Science Academy is a residential high school operated by the state of Illinois. We take students who are in their last 3 years of secondary school. We have about 600 students. They've been identified as gifted and talented in mathematics or science. And through the application process, they've also demonstrated that they have a desire to pursue advanced study in these topics already at the age of 13 or 14 years old. Part of what the students do is summed up on presentation day when they stand before their peers and give their paper and read. And again, there are two types of activities. And so what I want you to have an idea of a bit is, first of all, how at IMSA we've taken a look at the practice of science in society and to some degree distilled this into what's sometimes referred to as a laboratory school. The students, for example, participate in inquiry. They have no classes on Thursday. Inquiry is when they pursue research of independent origination, something that they're interested in. They have lab space, they have facilities, they have materials. They go through the entire research process of planning it, of writing a proposal, of having that proposal reviewed, of planning what the research questions would be and the methodology for collecting the data. They plan their data analysis and they meet with members of the staff or sometimes associated scientists in that area and talk about the data and the interpretation of the data. And then they go a step further, the step that's presentation day. They learn that that information is only meaningful if it's communicated to the community. They have to practice their presentations and be judged on their practice and then come back and try to improve it as much as possible. And sometimes these kids are speaking to rooms that have 50 or 60 people in them. So it's an opportunity to have these students not only come into contact with cutting-edge science methodologies and practices and content which is well beyond high school when they take microgravity physics or astrophysics. That's not a normal course. But I think that more importantly, they're engaged in real science as a social practice. Mentorship, the other thing that many students do, instead of doing the independent research on campus, they take a bus and they go to research hospitals, they go to universities in the area, they go to Argonne Lab or Fermilab, or they go to industrial research centers, and there they work with the practicing research scientists, either as part of contributing to part of their research program or doing small experiments that somehow contribute to the larger picture, but they actually engage in part of the day-to-day work of people who are doing real science. And on the presentation day, they bring those experiences back and present their findings. And usually their mentor is right there in the audience looking on. Since we like numbers and we want to see how things go, we're very pleased. Over the years, mentorship and inquiry have increased in terms of the number of students who participate. We have 650 students. And typically it's juniors and seniors the last 2 years, so about 400 students are likely to participate. And over the years, the numbers have gone up, so that about 70% of the students who are likely participants actually engage in these activities. Now, these are voluntary. There's no requirement saying that they need to do an inquiry or mentorship project. This is something that they pursue on their own because they see it as valuable or something that they want to experience. And interestingly also, the graph on the right, the red line on top, that's actually showing the split between male and female participants. So I'm also I'm pleasantly happy to report that over the last several years, there's been a trend in that we have a large percentage of female students engaging in these actual practices of science. Now, IMSA admits 50-50, our admitted class is 50% boys, 50% girls. So the fact that the girls are up above 60% of the participants in the program shows that they're overrepresented when it comes to people who want to do the extra work through their own election to do so. And so we're very happy. When they're doing actual legitimate work, the girls' engagement is very high. And a lot of times in the literature on girls' engagement in science learning, it's the opposite. Now, a little bit of background. IMSA has what's called the core competency. And the entire curriculum, and I do not have time today, and you're probably thankful that I don't have time to outline the entire 42-page curriculum of the academy. But it's got four, the core competency has four parts. First, that it's competency-driven, which means that the students demonstrate, that the proof is in the demonstration of the student performance. We're not looking to come up with easy tests that they can score well on to demonstrate that they've learned what they need to. It's inquiry-based, which means that students are engaged not only in the types of activities I've mentioned, but in their regular science classes, the curriculum is based upon the idea of a process of scientific investigation, formulation of question, of the question, design of the data collection, and the planning of the analysis, planning and interpretation. It is problem-centered. And if you're familiar with problem-based learning, what the students often are encouraged to do is decide what the problem is that they want to solve or know the answer to themselves, so that it's not something that's synthetic in an exercise, but we're attempting to place the work that they do in a context where they can actually see the application to the real world. And finally, it's integrative, meaning that we're trying to bring together the mathematics curriculum and the physics curriculum and the chemistry curriculum and biology as much as possible, seeing that much science today is no longer in a particular discipline, but is in fact involves knowledge from many disciplines. Now, that gives you a bit of an idea of how IMSA, to some degree, is a microcosm of the social practices of science. But another one of the things that happens is we take these students, we take these children, 12, 13, 14, who have this disposition and this desire, and we take them away from their families. Every student must live on campus in a dormitory. They typically go home every 5 to 6 weeks, and this is very unusual for students of this age in the United States. We take them from their families in the hopes that we are giving them opportunities that they will excitedly seize. But to some degree, they have to form a community once they arrive on the campus. And one of the research projects that I've been doing, it's a 3-year project. So lucky for you, I only have half the numbers. So this is going to be light on the numbers and a little bit long on the hand waving. One of the things that we're looking at is how students are motivated to pursue this type of difficult work when it's not required. The literature on motivation speaks a great deal about what's necessary to prompt students to become engaged in an activity and what's required for them to persist in pursuing a task that's often difficult. So we wanted to try to come up with an idea of what happens to these gifted students when you bring them into this very demanding environment and how it is that they cope and adjust. So this is all about the class of 2006 who are finishing up their second of 3 years. 210 students. The students represent several minority groups, and you can see that we do not admit students in the same percentage as the state of Illinois, but we admit them in the same percentages as they apply. So the admitted class represents the breakdown of the demographics of our applicant pool every year. We're 51-49 female-male that year, and as you can see, about 17% of our students were actually coming to high school a year early, in essence skipping a grade in order to attend IMSA. Now, the other thing that's interesting about IMSA is that 22% of our students were admitted through a program called Excel. We also attempt to admit students who come from a variety of social and economic backgrounds, meaning that it's slightly easier for a student who has a test score that's above average who comes from a rural area or from an impoverished urban area, to make it into IMSA than a student who comes from a suburban area that has a great deal of resources. What we're trying to do is identify giftedness and talent amongst many different types of populations. And children who have grown up in an environment that was not rich in enrichment activities, that was did not offer a lot of extracurricular activities after school, or where mathematics may be taught by the gym teacher because they do not have the funding to hire someone who's truly qualified, we recognize that those students will not perform as well at standardized tests. So when we look at their application packet, we look for their background, we look for their story, we look for everything that they tell us that indicates that they have pursued every possible avenue of education available to them where they are. Now, many of these students we know may then come to IMSA and being put for the first time in their life into a demanding curriculum, not be able to do very well. We have a program called Excel. Okay, thank you. Oh, ring the bell when I'm getting close. We have a program called Excel that attempts to not only remediate the students, but also provide something of a social network for them before they get here. It occurs for 3 weeks in the summer before classes start. They arrive on campus, this group, and not only do they learn about the resources that are available to them in terms of help and assistance, but they also meet one another and begin to realize that they are, in fact, capable. And we actually believe that that was really the... We couldn't make up for a decade of poor preparation that they may be suffering from. But what we can do is we can attempt to increase the expectancy that they have that they'll be able to succeed in the environment, and therefore increase the likelihood that they'll persist as soon as they run into the difficulty which we know will inevitably hit them. You're probably going to miss my charts, so I'll skip here. We used an instrument called the Motivated Strategies for Learning Questionnaire by Pintrick. It has 15 subscales that measure student motivation in several different areas. And I use a theory of motivation called expectancy value theory, which says that motivation is actually multidimensional, that intrinsic and extrinsic motivation, for example, are not mutually exclusive of one another, but you can both be motivated by a love of learning and wisdom and pursuit of the answer, as well as be motivated by money, high grades, or extreme test scores. They're not mutually exclusive. As well as strategy subscales, and we're particularly interested in things such as peer learning and help seeking. In a place like IMSA, where students live on the campus and they're around the professors a lot, we expect them not only to seek out their professors, the teachers when they need help, but also to engage and help and view their peers as a resource. Much of the work that the students do is collaborative. Much of the math curriculum, for example, is done in small groups. It's not cheating. We recognize that that's the way that academic work is done in the real world, and the students are preparing for it by working together. So what we've been doing, and this is just, I present this to you today to give you an idea of what happens when we have students from a diverse number of backgrounds, but who show the potential to develop a scientific mind when we put them in a greenhouse that's been, to some degree, the best degree possible, optimized for their development to the next stages of their pursuit of science. Some of the things that we've learned about what happens to them. And the modeling method that I use, if you're a statistician, I'm using hierarchical linear modeling. You'll see that, for example, this represents the first 14 months at IMSA. We're shocked that in the first year that they're there, their intrinsic goal motivation decreases. We had hoped that it would spiral upwards as they're exposed to the pure pursuit of wisdom and knowledge. But we learned things such as not only does it go down and seem to bounce up, but we also found that there were differences among groups. For example, the African-American students and the students who, and all the others, they started at the same place. This is a month prior to coming to them, so we administered this the first time. That over the first year, the non-African-American students were relatively stable compared to the students who were of African-American background. And so we looked at this and said, well, you know, we're looking for ways. And again, because this is a three-year study, we've not yet begun the analysis of this data. We have three more data collection points left. We're beginning to say this has policy implications for how we work with a particular group of our students who maybe have a different need or different expectations coming in. We found that African-American students had a different reaction and experience of test anxiety over their first year and a half at IMSA. And again, this represents to us an intervention, or the need to modify a program in response to something which is a very specific context, a way of experiencing the context for a particular group of people. Now, I don't want to anger the spirit of the bell here. So what I would like you to know, as I flip through quickly, is that we looked at a lot of different constructs over time. We looked at a lot of different groups, and we found that within this group of highly performing students, who are typically 1.5 to 2 standard deviations above the national norm for college-bound students, when they're 4 years younger, that this group itself does not act in a homogeneous way when you put them into this greenhouse that IMSA is. We found that many of the differences that exist in society between male and female students that are reflected in standardized assessments, that exist between different racio-ethnic groups or people from different socioeconomic backgrounds, are not overcome simply by having a high level of measured talent. That they still exist, and that when they are exposed to these things, which are the perfect environment for cultivation of their mind, they sometimes have much different reactions. And so we're in the process right now of understanding that. Like I said, maybe the next time we meet in 2 years, I'll have the final results to share with you. If you're interested, I can send you some of the pictures and slides. I'll be putting this online as well, with some more description of what we're doing. But I hope it does contribute to everyone's understanding of what one community, which is trying to create an environment that fosters the scientific mind, what its experience actually is in operation, and some of the challenges that rather unexpectedly emerged when we started to ask questions.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you for that overview. Rob, you're on. Discussion in the bar.